What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the Coin Spice podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
What is really going on, crypto savages? This is your host, C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief out at coinspice.io, back with another episode of the Coin Spice podcast. This episode, it's Chris Pacia, who is a back-end developer over at Open Bazaar, which I guess you'd kind of describe as the crypto version of eBay. It is catching on in that regard, bringing buyers and sellers together and using cryptocurrencies as the grease of the wheels, so to speak. The reason why I think it's an important project, it's decentralization, it's, you know, free market, all the stuff I love, but it's also a highlight of pushing cryptocurrency as a currency. You're going to no doubt hear a lot about blockchain technology and, you know, bells and whistles and code and whatever else. It sort of is beside the point as far as we're concerned if it's not being used as peer-to-peer digital cash that allows people to kind of control their own economic fate. And that's what Open Bazaar promotes, not only overtly, but also just in its general existence. So it's a really good time. If you know anything about Open Bazaar, it's gone through some recent changes and evolution, and it really is hitting a stride, and I think it's poised to do something kind of big this year and going forward. So it's a really good moment in their evolution to talk with Pacia, see where he's at, see where the project's come from, and where it's going to eventually go. That, and also Pace is a fighter. He's in the Bitcoin Cash community. He has some he's not afraid to mix it up. So he's a good guy to talk to just in general. I think especially during a bear market, the more of the players we can get in the space, you know, talking about what's going on, I think it's better for you as an investor or an enthusiast or someone who is trying to take the ecosystem's temperature. So sit back, get yourself a tall glass of milk. If you want the almond version of that, if you're a vegan, I'm not judging you. I just think as a man, you probably shouldn't be drinking soy. I've heard about man breasts. I'm not a doctor. I mean, yes, I'm a medical expert, but doctor, no. No, I'm not. I have to admit that right now. Anyway, that went kind of wrong. Without any further ado, here is Chris Pacia, back-end developer for Open Bazaar.
How did you initially find crypto? Like, what's sort of your backstory?
I guess my backstory is that, you know, I come at it kind of from a libertarian perspective. So I spent quite a bit of time like reading, you know, a lot of books on particularly economics, you know, political philosophy, that sort of stuff. And I was pretty much like a gold standard advocate. But the thing that always kind of never sat right with me with the gold standard was the fact that it was so, well, maybe it wasn't super easy, but the government found it relatively easy to just scrap the gold standard and, you know, replace it with fiat.
And worse,
And if you look at the history of the gold standard, it wasn't just, you know, a singular event back in like the 1930s when the government did this, or sorry, you know, even going like the Fed was created back in 1913. But it was really from the very beginning, it was just more and more control exercised over the systems as the years went by, more regulation, more crony capitalism. And so like the gold standard kind of lacked the property of, you could maybe say like resilience. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, many libertarians would argue, you know, part of the problem with limited government is like, let's say we magically somehow, you know, are able to shrink the size of the government and kind of get back to the Constitution, U.S. Constitution or whatever.
Sort of the night watchman state.
Yeah. Like what's going to keep it there? Like what's going to prevent the government from just blowing out of control like we have now? Like obviously the Constitution didn't work the first time. Why is it going to work the second time? And that was kind of my view at the gold standard. It's like, even if we return to the gold standard, you know, what's going to stop it from just, you know, the government from taking it over and just, we're just back to fiat again? Like, are we going to be in this like perpetual state of eternal vigilance to like prevent the system from being overridden, which didn't seem to work last time?
Right.
So, you know, enter Bitcoin has these properties. It's like a peer-to-peer network. It's kind of designed to be resilient in the face of this type of control. And that's kind of what got me interested in Bitcoin.
And it's interesting that you come first from gold. And I think that is a kind of a backstory I've heard a few times from libertarian fellow travelers. Gold to me, and this is almost, it is almost heresy in our circles. I honestly don't see the value anymore now in terms of anti-state, or like you say, sort of a devolutionary state, however you want to put it. I mean, central, when I go on to gold bug websites and investment to people who are really into this stuff and they're pushing precious metals and so on, all the talk is the central bank of X going to move, you know, gold this way? Are they going to let it loose that? Are they going to buy more here? It's sort of lost its bravery. It's kind of lost its, it really is a thing of governments, right?
Yeah. And it's just, I think the system could work, you know, if we had like a complete free market and we had some kind of like better legal system that wasn't so easily corruptible and what have you. But I mean, that's not the system that we live in today. And I'm like hard pressed to see like a return to a gold standard or anything like that, that isn't some kind of government managed
right
system, you know?
No, I'm with you on that 100%. And obviously gold is preferable to fiat, but I don't know if that's really saying a whole lot. So that's interesting. So about what time do you encounter, I'm going to assume it's Bitcoin, but cryptocurrencies as a possible alternative?
Yeah, this was probably, I think I first maybe heard about Bitcoin in like 2011. It was before Mt. Gox was hacked. But I wasn't really into Bitcoin at that point in time. Like I heard about it and I was like, oh, that sounds like a nice effort. But I didn't look into it enough to really like have an informed opinion on it. And then when Mt. Gox was hacked, I guess the first time, and there was a couple of times this happened, but the first time, there was all these headlines, you know, like Bitcoin was hacked, right? And so I was like, oh, I guess that's that. So it was a nice try of them, I guess. But then, I don't know, it was maybe like a year later or so, you know, Bitcoin's still kicking, it's still going. And I was like, well, you know, let me look into this Bitcoin a little bit more. So it was probably maybe around like 2012 or so when I kind of got involved.
So it started to fight back and have maybe a touch of that resiliency that you were speaking of that maybe gold lacked, eh?
Yeah. I mean, it was, and plus I think some of those original headlines for people who didn't know much about Bitcoin at the time, which was myself, 2011, you see headlines that say like Bitcoin hacked, like you don't need to look into it anymore, right? Like that kind of seemed like that was going to be inevitable at the time. And you know, it only seems inevitable to people unless you don't, if you don't know how it works. But once you understand how it works, it seems a bit more robust.
Yeah, that is interesting. And did you develop the tech background after, or I have a feeling that came many years before?
I mean, I was always kind of playing around with computers and software development, but I wasn't like professional programmer. It was like a hobby type thing up until, you know, I got involved with Bitcoin. Then I started working on stuff professionally.
That's killer. And eventually you get to Open Bazaar. Were there other projects prior to that?
I had some like side projects that I kind of worked on. Also worked a little bit with the Ryan and Manib. They worked at the time. It was called One Name. Now it's Blockstack. So I worked with them a little bit before that.
Okay. And how important, you know, because I sort of know the answer to this. Let me put a pin in that. So let's get to Open Bazaar now. the first iteration of Open Bazaar that, that I became aware of was something to do with Amir Taki, and then decidedly not to do with Amir Taki. And I think there's a nice clean dividing line between those two times. How much did Amir have to do, or do you know, with Open Bazaar coming into existence?
Yeah, so they created, I guess, an early prototype of what would become Open Bazaar. They called it Dark Market. This was right. Amir Taki and a couple other people. I should know names escaped me at the moment. I think Pablo was one of them. But there was like a hackathon entry that I think they won like $20,000 with, and that's when. Shortly after that, it was Brian, who's our CEO, Brian Hoffman. He contacted Amir. Brian was looking for a project to get involved with in the space, and he contacted Amir and said, basically, like, can I help? You know, what can I do? Can I help out with this project? What are you guys planning on doing with it? And I think Amir kind of said, you know, we don't have any plans for it. Like, I'm not going to be working on it anymore. It was just for the hackathon. And so he was like, if you want to take it over, go right ahead. And so that's when kind of Brian took it over and then changed the name to Open Bazaar. Kind of a little bit of a rebranding there. And then, you know, they worked on it for, I think, maybe about a year. And then that's when I joined, I think, a year later. And I followed the project pretty closely during that year's time. And so it was kind of interesting that I wouldn't have like guessed I would be, you know, working on it.
I remember downloading that first iteration that I guess Brian was spearheading then, and I liked it. I liked the idea, especially post Silk Road. just for someone who was kind of dabbling in that sort of area, it was a fantastic idea, but again, that first iteration was a little clunky.
I couldn't get it to work at all, really.
Right. I'm glad you said that. I really don't want to offend anybody because it's such a great project now. But I remember thinking, like, fuck, you know, I this has got to work, you know. And I thought maybe I was doing something wrong or, you know, whatever. So I kept going back to it. And I figured, like you say, there was a year there where, you know, I could not get the damn thing to do what I wanted it to do. And then all of a sudden something changed, and I can't remember exactly when it happened. You would know better than I, and I don't want to blow smoke, but I distinctly remember there are 2.0 version or a new thing, and you somehow coming into my orbit. Am I getting the chronology right that you were helped roll it out the sort of the second part of Open Bazaar?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess maybe kind of like the third iteration what we have today. So the first one was the original Dark Market client that they wrote, that Amir wrote, and then like Brian was like hacking on and what have you. And then after they raised some funds, I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of money. So it was really just, so we started working on kind of a new version that was mostly a kind of a rewrite because the existing code was not, you know, a lot of it needed to be reworked. So, but it was mainly just me, and we had like one UI developer, Josh, and I think maybe close to the end of that year, we picked up a second UI developer, but it was basically like more or less two of us, who working on this kind of new version of Open Bazaar. But this was kind of like, maybe like a little bit of an MVP. It was sort of like, you know, we if we're going to build out Open Bazaar the way we'd like to build it, we're going to need more money and more resources. And so it can't just be like two people, you know?
Right.
So it was kind of an MVP, and that was the Open Bazaar, I guess, 1.0, you could call it. And it served its purpose. I mean, we were able to raise some more money with that, but then we kind of said, you know, let's, so when we started the 1.0, I had a lot of, I wasn't terribly happy with like the architecture of it. And so like the way that Amir designed the thing was kind of like a glorified web server. So each node was their own node, but you were essentially like a web server, and people would make direct connections to you to view your store. And so not a whole lot different than a normal web server. So I wanted to make the network kind of more distributed and kind of more robust. And that's kind of when I found IPFS, and that kind of had pretty much all the attributes that I was already thinking about doing with OpenBazaar. And so while we were working on the 1.0, I was already in my head thinking, like, you know, how am I going to integrate IPFS into this, you know, later on down the road. And then at some point, you know, that became like OpenBazaar 2.0 with the version with IPFS, and then we kind of rebuilt the user interface to make it look nicer and this sort of stuff. So that's kind of the iteration that we're on now, that has kind of a bit of more robust peer-to-peer architecture to it.
And the difference is startling and really, really, really fantastic. Now, I jumped ahead because I'm not a podcast professional. And I should have started with what is OpenBazaar. But it has gone from kind of a, an answer to Silk Road-ish type thing into a jack of all trades. Like, you guys do crypto trade. You just do a bunch of stuff. And it's always always improving, but or changing and expanding. Can you kind of give a kind of back of the envelope elevator pitch as to what OpenBazaar is?
Yeah, so I kind of like to think of it as sort of like a peer-to-peer eBay or Etsy or something like that. It's an e-commerce marketplace, but it connects peers directly to each other without going through any kind of centralized servers or anything like that. And I mean, it works fairly well. I mean, we've got our, you know, hiccups here and there. It's, I think, one of the bigger challenges is, as a peer-to-peer network, it tends to be slower than a normal, you know, like eBay, for example. Right. And I mean, that's kind of one of the challenges that you have. You know, we're still kind of very early days with a lot of this peer-to-peer technology. I think IPFS is still technically, I think, in like an alpha version, I think. I'm not even sure that they've called their system beta yet. So, I mean, there's a lot of optimizations that we can still make, and it's kind of like slow progress on that front. But the end goal would be to get it so that the user experience is very similar to what you would get on like an eBay or an Etsy in terms of speed, performance, feature set. But, you know, in the background, everything done, you know, peer-to-peer. Right.
And that's an excellent way to put it. How much is your work with OpenBazaar tied to the idea of the currency in cryptocurrency? So we're getting a lot now from all different sides, whether it's store of value arguments with Bitcoin Core, BTC, or kind of the, lack of a better phrase, sort of the consensus group. Joe Lubin's idea of it being more blockchain based. We have kind of all these different niches within a niche, but there are still some people, thankfully, dedicated to the currency side, and you seem to be kind of laser focused on that. Is this, am I characterizing that right? Does OpenBazaar kind of go hand in hand with maybe your view, as I understand it, of crypto's real value being in the currency aspect?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, if people are just using it as a HODL asset, or HODL, or however they pronounce it, it's, you know, it's not, I mean, the asset is not really of a lot of use to anybody, but certainly for us, like, we want to use it as money. And what, like, one of the, I guess, original kind of, you know, concepts would be kind of OpenBazaar would sort of be like, you know, maybe the premier place where you could, you know, buy and spend crypto, you know, cryptocurrency, right. or you know, buy things with it, because it's like that, you know, kind of perfect meeting of the two technologies. It was, I guess, not this past year, but when Bitcoin transacts. So for a long time, this was like Bitcoin only project. And I really didn't want to make it anything other than Bitcoin only, because you start adding other cryptocurrencies, it's a lot of complexity, it makes everything harder, and it's just much easier if you only have to deal with one, you know?
Sure.
So I didn't really want to do anything other than Bitcoin, but then, like, in the end of 2017, like Bitcoin just blew up, right? It was like $30 median fee to make a transaction, you know, $100 on average. And like, you know, OpenBazaar usage basically dropped to like zero. I mean, no one's going to pay $30 transaction fee to buy something.
Yep.
So we had to kind of real quick, you know, do something to kind of, to get the, like other coins in the app that could allow people to continue using it. And I guess, so we kind of, to some extent, have been working on that almost like a year now, maybe a little over a year. The first kind of, the quickest iteration, which we had out after a few months after December when the thing blew up, was we made it so you could run it with different cryptocurrencies, but it was, you kind of had to pick your, what coin you wanted to use at startup and just stick with that one. And so it was like this, the app still only used one at a time, but you had to pick which one it was at startup. And we did it that way just because that was the quickest thing to get out the door. So people could start using it again. But we wanted to ultimately transition to where you could use multiple cryptocurrencies at the same time. And that was a major architectural change on the back end. And we had to write like a whole bunch of new wallet code and integrate all this and change up some of the order flow. And it was just quite a bit. The UI had to be changed. So there was quite a bit that that required. So actually that was, we were working on that, I don't know, a solid, I almost want to say like 10 months maybe. And so that,
which
that
is we an just, eternity in your industry, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we finally got that out the door yesterday. Actually, it was a release for this new version where it has like multiple coins in there that you can use. And hopefully it'll be easier to add some other ones. Right now it's, I think, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin, Zcash. And I think we're not that far from having Ethereum integrated as a possibility. So that should be coming shortly. And then maybe we'll see with some other ones, maybe like Dash or Monero or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, is the lesson then that, you know, eggs in one basket cliches, kind of not having the luxury of a crystal ball going forward. I think it's far easier to be in a Reddit subreddit chat room or Telegram or whatever and firing off bromides against this or that project. But as a business, as someone who's trying to build a project, when you see what happens in 2017, which is, you know, an embarrassment of riches, where BTC is flying through the roof and everybody's getting into crypto, but your business is tanking because, you know, the use case for it initially, why everybody got excited, is now subsiding to say the least. That sort of pushes you in to consider other options. And I think that kind of led you down a completely different path, right?
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, it was kind of almost like there was like a before and after. So before December 2017, it wasn't uncommon for there to be like Bitcoin only businesses, right? So like if you're going to be dealing with cryptocurrency, it's like, let's just deal with the number one cryptocurrency and like not worry about all these other ones. And you could get away with that because, you know, it's Bitcoin's number one. It was working well. It has the most support. And, you know, you could just say, you know, we use cryptocurrency, but like, we don't have any reason to use anything but the number one cryptocurrency. But after December 2017, it was like pretty much every project in the cryptocurrency space now is like having to switch to a multi-currency architecture. So it almost every single one. In fact, I think there are very few that are still like, we're only going to use one cryptocurrency. I think there's maybe a couple like Lightning Network apps that are insistent on, you know, only using Bitcoin.
Right.
Maybe a couple like Bitcoin SV people who insist on only using Bitcoin SV. But other than that, I think just about every other project is kind of saying, look, you know, what works and what doesn't work is like, you know, changing so fast in the space that you have to, you know, you can't just invest everything in a single cryptocurrency or you're going to screw yourself.
I think that is the lesson, at least so far, as far as I understand it, that seems to be, you know, walking away from it. And I think all of us, at one point or another, were in the maximalist camp. you know, at least in terms of the mindset, like you were saying, it wasn't so much a philosophical thing. It was really a rational calculation. You know, you may like that project and think it's neat over there, but the network effect, you know, no one has it, no one's using it, so it can be a wonderful shiny thing to the side, but, you know, I got to sell widgets. Well, that's really, really interesting. So take us to now, Open Bazaar now, what it's doing. You said you just had a recent rollout, right? I'm trying to think of it. Is it Haven? Is that what's...
Yeah, so Haven is it's basically like the Open Bazaar mobile app or kind of an Open Bazaar experience, maybe you could call it, for, you know, designed for mobile. We had some quite a bit of like internal debates over the branding of this thing, and I think the debating was like, do we call it, because the name of our company is Obi-Wan, and it was kind of like, do we make this like an Obi-Wan project, or do we call it Open Bazaar? And there were just some debates over that. And like, I think there was some concern about, you know, whether it could be accepted into like the Apple, you know, the store, you know, those sorts of things. And so I think we settled on just like a new brand, you know, Haven for it, which is actually, the branding is like really, really good on it. But
it looks cool.
Yeah, and it's using Open Bazaar under the hood, and it's the Open Bazaar Go. So I work on the back end, which is the does a lot of the heavy lifting of the peer-to-peer network stuff and the IPFS stuff and the order management and all that. And so that basically we just compile that to the mobile to make it run on a mobile device. And then it has like a separate UI that talks to that mobile binary basically. And so, I mean, it seems to be working pretty well, you know, from my use of it. And it's, I think, I don't know, it doesn't seem like it's that far from release. I guess we'll have to see. There's, I know there's at least one more thing that I have to do on my side before feature that they need, but so not that far out.
Okay, so Haven has not been rolled out then?
No, not so they had like the promo video for it. That was okay. Kind of like an announcement. But yeah, I wouldn't expect it to be that much longer.
Cool. And the movement then, as you say, is into multi-coin support, which you guys now have, and then mobile, which is obviously going to be huge. Roughly how many vendors at any one time, like people selling stuff, do you have on there?
Oh, I probably should know the number off the top of my head. I haven't looked recently. I don't know. I mean, there were. I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of a thousand or a couple thousand, holding steady for a while. I haven't looked at it in a little while. The app has been downloaded quite a few times. I think several hundred thousand times or something like that. But, you know, with a lot of this stuff, it's trying to get people to stay, you know, stick around, you know what I mean? So for that part, it's the traditional marketing challenges of trying to build a two-sided marketplace where you need both, you know, buyers and sellers. You know, there's some challenges there. And then you can add in, like, the technical challenges of, you know, ours does, it's so much harder to like build an e-commerce platform out of a peer-to-peer network than it would be to just create like a server-based architecture like eBay,
right.
You know? So, you know, all those things, everything is like taking small steps in the right direction. We're also another thing that we've started work on as well is a browser-based version. And this is actually pretty interesting because the browser version is actually capable of talking to the peer-to-peer networks from the browser. So hopefully we'll be able to see like a for the most part, kind of like a mostly full peer-to-peer network app in the browser that can talk to like the Open Bazaar desktop nodes or even the mobile nodes. Might need to go through a relay. But basically it'll more or less kind of be mostly peer-to-peer. And hopefully that'll be out, I don't know, maybe this year. I think that'll kind of be our big project for this year. is to get that out. And so then we'd have like three platforms, the desktop, the mobile, and the browser. And from there, it's kind of like we need to polish it. You know what I mean? We need to get it so that the UX is just as slick as what you see on other, you know, big platforms.
And give us a sense of the variety of stuff that's sold on OpenBazaar.
I mean, all kinds of stuff. I think more the stuff related to like cryptocurrency, like T-shirts and stuff like that, is probably the most popular.
Sure.
But there's I don't know, all kinds of stuff from like comic books to hot sauce. I've bought some really good hot sauce on there on a few occasions. You know, and then you have your, I don't know, more questionable stuff, that people sell. But yeah, it's a pretty wide variety. I also think like one of the things that we need to do UX-wise is to kind of improve the ability to sort of browse the network and find interesting content. I think that's probably a little bit of a shortcoming right now. You know, it shouldn't be too hard for us to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's a worthwhile project, and I think it leads us to kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is there a danger of this thing getting shut down? I know, you know, technically that may sound like a dumb question, but from the outsider's perspective, or if I want to do business on it for whatever reason, I think there's you know, with all the gallantry of peer-to-peer and being decentralized and so on. And that's why the project is so much more difficult technically. I think people from the outside looking in are kind of like, yeah, but is this thing going to be around? And what are the dangers of me clicking onto my desktop or my browser or my mobile wallet and seeing this site has, again, I know it's a dumb question, this site has been seized by the FBI or something like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably not going to happen in terms of, like, I mean, there's not a whole lot for them to seize, but this is one of the challenges is it does require some backup in, not backup, but some infrastructure to keep the network up and running. So, like, just to give you one example, like, things can be priced in fiat currency. Like, you can set a price in dollars. Like, I'm going to sell this for $10. And it'll do the conversion into whatever the cryptocurrency is,
right,
the exchange rate. But that implies that we need to query an API to get the exchange rates, right? So if our API server goes down, you know, then the app kind of stops working from that perspective. You could still price it in like Bitcoin or whatever cryptocurrency you're pricing it in, but like the exchange rate functionality would stop working. There's also, it requires some seed nodes to, just like every peer-to-peer network requires some seed nodes that, right, you can connect to get up and running. If those seeds go down, then then you'd have to find some other way to connect to the network. That sort of stuff. We have a couple different ways the wallet can work, but the current wallet that we've been working on, this multi-currency wallet, is like an API-based, server-based wallet as well, and we run the servers for that. So if that goes down, then like someone, so the point is like someone would need to spin up all this other infrastructure to like keep OpenBazaar mostly functioning, which is kind of, you know, a little bit of a challenge. I would prefer that it was like everything could be done in like pure peer-to-peer. But you know, some things you can't do it that way. You know what I mean? But I mean, we've designed everything such that like other people can run the infrastructure. It doesn't need to be us, but you know, someone would need to run like an exchange rate API or, you know, a wallet backend server or something like that.
And is this much of a conversation with how litigious, especially the United States is with regard to these sorts of, you know, being labeled dark market and dark web and, you know, all this other stuff? Is there, you know, do you worry about, you know, tattletales and sort of the precedent set by the Ross Ulbrichts of the world?
I think I worry, you know, a little bit. I wouldn't say that there's no concern there, but I, you know, it seems like the most of the usage of OpenBazaar, I mean, like the vast majority of it has just been for selling like legal stuff. So I kind of don't look at it as like, you know, there's probably far more, you know, illegal activity, you know, going through like the Chrome browser than, you know, the OpenBazaar browser, you know, certainly in absolute numbers, but maybe even percentage wise, I don't know.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really interesting. Let me just, cause I've already kept you over a little bit here. Let me get your sense of the space. I'll save the easiest question for the last. But let me get to, you know, the sense of the space, kind of where you see it now. Because I've been doing this last few shows actually, and kind of giving a gloom and doom scenario and almost on purpose, just showing my hand a little bit here, but you know, to say that we're in a good space, you know, in a good place right now, within the ecosystem, I think is putting it charitably to you know, and let me just sort of whittle this down here. I'm a little bit too verbose. We're in a really, really tough cycle. Do you see this as extending, even getting worse, or are you bullish on the future? Especially now post Bitcoin Cash hard fork, which you put yourself out there quite a bit on. Now the dust has settled somewhat. Where are you in your head right now? And what do you see kind of in the recent or just recent in the coming future? Wow, I don't even know what I asked you.
So I think it's, I mean, obviously, you know, the bear market is hurting a lot of projects and a lot of interest in things. But I kind of see this as a bit healthy to some extent, because I feel like so many people got so overextended during the bull run, and there were so many projects that were started up that were really sucking, you know, mindshare out of the space and money and resources from maybe more legitimate projects. And like a lot of that stuff is shutting down now. A lot of these ICOs are going bust. You know, businesses are laying off workers. And that, I mean, that doesn't sound like a good thing, but it kind of helps get down to like the core of like, what are you good at type deal, you know, and allows everyone to kind of refocus, shed the dead weight, and just focus on kind of building good apps and good products. You know, you don't have the luxury in this market. We don't have the luxury of just the hype cycle, you know, just the constant pumping and hype that like people just want to get on board with anything and everything. Instead, now it's like they want to get on board because something is actually creating like actual value. I think there was during the bubble and this big bull run, I think there was very little actual value being created, but yet like the prices of all this stuff was just skyrocketing. And now everything is closer to reality. I still don't know if we're back to reality yet. I mean, stuff might still be overpriced, you know, relative to that. But I do think it helps refocus everyone on like, oh, if we actually want to see that those big prices again, we need to actually build real products this time, not you know, just spam everything and pump and dump everything, you know.
Wow. You know, this is something that it's hard, because a lot of the younger guys and gals who got into the space late, you know, they've only known crypto as a, you know, especially if you're in the United States during this, you know, 10-year bull run, and that could be ending with regard to the American stock market and so on. But they've only really known it in these highfalutin times, and now that maybe that's curbing, and then the cryptocurrency space has taken a giant hit, this is all brand new for them. So to hear, you know, someone of your stature kind of, you know, hey, let's look at it this way, I think is super important to give them perspective. So thanks for that, and thanks again for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you to follow your work?
I mean, you can check out, you know, like openbazaar.org. We now have the openbazaar.com up too, which is a little bit of a web gateway that people can at least view some products on there. I'm on Twitter. My handle is @ChrisPacia. And then, you know, I hang out on Reddit a little bit too sometimes.
Very cool, man. Well, thanks again. I'm definitely rooting for you. You're a good guy in the space, and you're someone who you know, we're super, super lucky to have. And thanks again, man, for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.